love false starts. What's up?
Welcome to another episode of All Over Voiceover Kit VH. I'm your host, Kit VH, and welcome to this episode. Hey, I'm so excited to be joined in studio today by the lovely, the talented Shelby Young and AJ LoCascio. Thank you so much, both you guys, for being here.
Of course.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us, yeah.
This was like, I don't know, AJ and I have known each other for a little while. Today's the first time I've actually meeting Shelby, but Shelby and AJ got to record together. Here's how we are all connected. We all got to be not just like voices in Star Wars Forces of Destiny, but we got to play old Han and Leia respectively. And we've been nerding out all morning.
Yeah.
How did you, just for starters, like Shelby, where are you from?
I'm from Florida originally. I started acting when I was really young, though. So I started traveling between Florida and New York, and then I made my way out here just before I became a teenager. And
were you doing shows in New York and stuff? Or what were you up to?
I went to New York originally because I thought my interest was theater, but once I was there, I started booking some independent films, and I realized, like, oh, whoa, this is what I want to be doing.
Oh, wow.
And I actually started with some voiceover in New York. I used to do all of the, a vast majority of the Silly Rabbit, Chicks Are for Kids.
What? Really? Are you serious?
That's amazing.
As a little kid,
awesome.
Yeah.
You just moved to celebrity status for me. Nothing else impressed me more than that.
That's amazing. That was super fun. It was crazy because when I first auditioned it was a Lucky Charms one originally. It's all under Saatchi & Saatchi, so they like to reuse the kids for tricks and Lucky Charms and Go-Gurt, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But I was super sick when I got the audition, and I'd never done voiceover before, so I didn't know what I was doing, and I go in with this like weird little raspy kid voice, and they loved it, of course, so then I had to put it back on for my next one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Smoke a bunch of cigarettes.
Right.
Right.
That's right.
But yeah, that's kind of, and then I took a very long break from voiceover, which was the dumbest thing I could have done. I just didn't even think that was like a career path at the time.
Were you like in school in Florida or school in New York or where?
Homeschooled,
like,
actually.
Oh, really?
I had been in a regular school, but I booked a Nickelodeon pilot when I was a kid that filmed in Iceland for a month.
What?
Yeah.
For Nickelodeon?
Yeah, it's this show called Lazy Town.
On Lazy Town?
You wouldn't have seen me unless you looked on YouTube. My pilot never aired.
Okay.
But the series went non-union. The pilot was SAG. So once it went non-union, we had the option to stay, but we didn't want to like rock the boat, so we turned it down. But my school just wouldn't, they'd never dealt with that before, so I started homeschooling then. So I tried out middle school out here when I first moved, but I was a very nerdy eighth grader coming in when everybody had friends, and I showed up on my first day in a polo shirt with a rolling backpack. And had a kid like ask me if I could give him a ride around the school on my backpack. My bag got kicked all day. I came home crying. I was like, Mom, I don't like school. So yeah, homeschooling was what it was for me. That's what worked.
Wow. I blame your parents for that one, though. Giving your kid a rolly bag? Did they think you were going to the airport?
I don't know. I blame my mom. I do. It was pink. Maybe that, I don't know.
Oh, man. That just made you more of a target.
It's so true. It's so true.
What do kids carry these days?
That's right.
Give her a rolly bag.
Dude, most of these backpacks now, like, it's a backpack, but it's a total, like, transformer. Like, the handle comes up, and then there's wheels.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's like this insane, like, Swiss Army knife / Leatherman thing.
Mine was a sheep's bladder with a rope tied through it.
And you didn't get bullied?
No, I had to carry my water in it.
What?
And no, I'm making that
up. Okay.
I'm just saying,
I'm like,
in my day.
Happening?
Where did you
No. You both took me so seriously.
I know, I'm like, what?
I was just making a joke about, in my day.
No. Sheep's bladder.
It was
filled
a sheep's
rope tied around it.
Yeah, exactly.
Fill it full of grog. Drink that on the bus.
I had to befriend the sheep years and then kill it in front of its family.
Weird.
Well, where are you from? Are you from here originally?
No, not at all. I'm from Jersey.
Oh, no kidding.
And then where's my weird story? Jersey did a lot of, my dad had a, so this is how I got into all this stuff.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I was obsessed with Spielberg, Star Wars, all that stuff. And my dad had this camera he had just bought. And he was like, don't touch my camera. And I don't know why that was a thing. He was like, stay out of my office. Don't touch my camera. And so I snuck into his room, into his office to play some video game or something and sat on the camera and broke it.
Oh, no.
And it would only film in black and white. And he was so mad at me. And so he was like, here, and gave me the camera, like, out of anger. And so I used it to start making movies. And I realized how much I was obsessed with. I made, like, weird ones, too, like Little Rascals and, like, because I loved Little Rascals as a kid. And, like, of course, we did Indiana Jones and Jurassic Park and all that stuff. And then I decided I wanted to go to film school. So I went to school in New York. And when I was there, I started acting. And all my friends were like, AJ, just, you know, you can jump in a lake filled with horse crap. And you can do all this, like, stand at the edge of that building
like
and almost
friends die.
And, yeah, I mean, constantly getting beaten up and thrown off things. And, it was crazy. So then, after college, I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't really want to act. I was kind of just lost. And then one of my friends was like, hey, do you want to come out to L.A. and just be my roommate? And I was like, okay. So I did. And weirdly, this is actually the reason I started acting was I heard about the Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park was part of the announcement, the Back to the Future game that was coming out. And I was like, I do a good Michael J. Fox impression. I should call up the company and leave a message as Michael J. Fox and see if maybe if Michael J. Fox isn't doing it, maybe they'll, you know, get some obscure kid
from
New Jersey.
Yeah, right?
So ballsy. And the funny thing is I left the message on this woman, Rhoda's, she was the accountant at at Telltale Games. Like, I left the message on her answering machine, and I guess she passed it around because I got a message, like, I don't remember if it was like a couple days or a week later, that was just like, hey, can you send in like a real audition? So, and this is back when I was in New Jersey before I moved out to LA. Weirdly.
So, you, like, how'd you find out about it? Was it like.
There was like a press release that, like, I was working in the Bronx or no, Queens. I was working as an editor in Queens and I was just like on the internet constantly.
Like a video editor or what?
I was a video editor, for a therapeutic resource center, which was so boring.
Hey, man, I used to be a multimedia producer on. An interactive training for plastic blow molding.
Whoa.
Yeah, plastic.
That's actually kind of fascinating.
Plastic bottle manufacturing.
Wow. That's amazing.
So a whole career before. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No. That's okay. I know all about supination and all these weird words I never knew about, like using like tactile things to teach kids with learning disabilities how to like interact with the world. It was nuts.
That's
so
awesome.
But yeah, so I basically left a message and they were like, hey, send in a voice audition. And so I went and bought a Rock Band mic and like taped it to a paint can and did like, hey, this is, you know, Marty McFly. And like did that, you know, sent it off, didn't hear anything. And then I, you know, that's when I got the call from my friend. I was like, you want to move to L.A.? So I moved to L.A. with her. And the week I got there, I got this random call that was like, hey, it's between you and one other dude for this Marty McFly thing.
You're like,
and this is months later. Like, I had no idea. I was like, well, that was weird. You know, like I just sort of sent it out. And so they were like, it's between you and this one other guy. Can you, like, send, here's the script. Can you just do the script? And so, like, I did it. And then a couple days after that, I got another call. And like, hey, you got it. And I was like, what? So it, like, completely changed my path. It's weird telling the story because I don't believe it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I totally understand that, though.
So that was that was sort of it. And then from there, it was a struggle to get anything else. But
right.
It was, it was mind-blowing. I mean, Christopher Lloyd was involved and Bob Gale. And, like, it was insane. Yeah.
Crazy.
So I went from being like afraid to admit I wanted to act to like having no choice.
Yeah.
So, which I was totally okay
it's
with.
It's your own fault. You left
I know, exactly.
That's right. You started it.
I did start it. I was like, I'll just throw a voicemail down and see if it changes my life. Yeah.
Were you an impressions guy prior to? Well, I mean, this is, I guess, for you too. Like, is impressions something that had. I mean, had been in your life or not so
not
much or just kind of
exactly.
Like.
Exactly. I've been voice matching for the past couple of years for celebrities,
yeah.
Which was something I had no idea was even in my wheelhouse until I got an audition. And I don't do impressions. Like because to me, impressions are like a caricature almost of the person. And it has to be funny in my head, even though I know they don't. But I just that's not a talent I have. But for whatever reason, like matching very close voices is something I randomly can do. I've done like Selena Gomez and Bella Thorne and the whole slew of people.
That's awesome.
So this is the first animated series where it is just me where I can actually say it's my voice because, you know, with voice matching, you have to keep it hush-hush and you can't see what the project is and whatnot.
Right.
But yeah, no, first for this kind of situation, which is awesome. terrifying, but awesome.
That's awesome, man.
For me,
well, it's, I have a weird relationship with impressions. Like, my dad always did impressions, and so it was kind of like in our, but like obsessive impressions. Like, he would do like an impression of Elvis that was like, it had to be perfect.
Yeah.
Or like Jerry Lewis, and it had to be perfect. So that's sort of the way, like, we wouldn't just do them. Mm-hmm. Like, even now, like, when friends are like, hey, do that impression of whoever, I'm like,
yeah.
You know, like, same. I'm weird about
it's like, it's like 90, it could be a 90% impression and I won't do it.
Right, exactly.
Like, if I can't nail it,
yeah.
I won't claim that I can do it.
Yeah, totally. It has to be, I was like that with, it wasn't until one of my friends had heard me do my Harrison Ford sort of in passing, and he does all of Johnny Depp's voice matching. And he had heard me do it, and he was like, dude, you have a really good Harrison Ford. And I was like, no, I don't know. Eh. And so he actually brought me in, and like, we went into his studio, and he did a, like, he basically, like, sort of pulled it out of me and was, like, helping me train to do this sort of Harrison Ford. And, like, but it was something I was shy about because, you know, Harrison Ford's such a high bar in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you understand.
Yeah.
You know, so the idea of, like the audacity, like, how dare I even try?
Yeah.
You know, like, that's how I felt about it. And so it took someone who I trusted, my friend Jared, to actually pull it out of me, Jared Butler. And, but yeah, impressions were something, I mean, friends would pull it out of me and I'd be like, oh, okay, I'll do my Michael J. Fox, or I'll do, I can't even think of who I would do, you know, all kinds of weird people. But like, I never really wanted to do it. I would do Robin Williams for some friends and like, oh, hey, you know, he's got that sound and like, but I never wanted to do it. I was always sort of like pulling teeth.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, even now I'm always weird about it. Like, I can't watch friends do impressions. Like, I have, you know, I'm sure you have friends that do impressions. Like, you know, you do that and I'm okay with it. You and Scott White, you'll post stuff and I'm like, I love them, so it's okay. But like, people I don't know, watching them do like 100 voice impressions in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I want to jump off a bridge.
I understand. I totally understand. Yeah. It was such a parlor trick for me growing up to be able to do, like, it started with the cartoons and then moved to, you know, I was talking about with Chris Cox, and it was like, when did you start doing people? And it was because when my voice changed that I couldn't do, you know, I can still do Daffy Duck and Sylvester and those characters. But then it's like, oh, I can actually do the easy ones with, like, you know, it's so fascinating to hear you guys talk about specifically regular people, because, like, you know, there's the Jack Nicholson, everyone's got a Nicholson,
right,
they've all got different shades of what Nicholson do you do you do Five Easy Pieces Nicholson, or do you do Nicholson in You Can't Handle It, you know,
right.
Everybody has their walk-in, everybody has
Al Pacino. I hear another guy do Al Pacino,
exactly.
Oh my god,
you got, so then it's like trying to find the right bit for it,
right
you know, like, my Al Pacino is rooted in him working in fast food because it's stupid. But it's like a thing. It's like,
you got to find your little,
got to find the joke, because otherwise, because like what you're saying in terms of voice matching of like, it's not a bit.
Yeah.
I'm trying to tell the story on behalf of that person who's not available.
Exactly. Right. And it has to be so seamless. I was just working on a project where literally it's this, I can't say who, but this celebrity who they added a second half to her line, and it just cuts away with the camera for a second. So it has to sound exactly like her voice seamlessly flowing into my voice, which is so much pressure.
It's so much
pressure.
But, you know, I heard it back and I was like, is that me? Like, it was
awesome.
Strange thing that in the moment when I'm recording it, I can't tell. And then when I hear it back, I'm like, oh, okay, I did good.
Yeah.
Okay. Or, oh, I did bad.
It's so weird. It's like tuning music is how I think about it.
Yeah.
Like, I did a lot of, like, I played guitar as a kid and like taught myself how to play harmonica by listening to other songs. And it feels the same to me, where you're just, you hear the note and you go, okay, I got to try to make that note match that note.
Exactly.
It's weird. I actually did something really similar like 3 days ago where I'd never heard of the actor before.
Yeah.
And I was nervous because I went in and I was just like, this guy's got like an accent. And I, you know, obviously I can't say what it is, but like they brought me into the room and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And then when they played it back, I was like,
yeah.
But it was the same thing where I was finishing a line for the character and then like something happens to them and I had to, you know, do what they would do. And I was basically making it up. And it was terrifying because I was like, it's different to do something like we were talking about, like Harrison Ford or Jack Nicholson. There's sort of a rhythm and a musicality to it.
Right.
But when it's someone you've never heard of, like I've done a lot of Chris Pratt stuff for Lego.
Oh, awesome.
And like, I don't know Chris Pratt that well. I had to study so much to try to figure out, because they sent the audition and I just matched his voice like back to back. Like, oh, I'm Chris Pratt. I do this and blah, blah, blah. You know, like whatever the line was, like, I'm a Lego. You know, like, and I can match that.
That's so good. Yeah. That's great, man. That's
I mean, it's basically just my, but like that freaked me out even more because there wasn't anything to sort of hang my hat on. Because I wasn't doing, he just kind of sounds like me. Everything's kind of like this and I'm Chris Pratt. And, But that freaked me out. And then I had to go do, we did this like Jurassic World movie, and then I had to do like the Lego ride. And I was like, oh my God, these are all, I've never heard him do any of this. Yeah. And like that stuff to me is like way scarier than doing like, you know, like we were saying, like someone you know very, very well.
Totally.
I can predict what Harrison's going to do. Not that his moves are so
I know exactly.
But there is an aspect of like, you know, even in the audition for this piece, it was like, I knew where he was going. I knew what his attitude, what his attitude was or how he was going to. Like, there was a pause in one of the lines that wasn't even in the short.
Right.
Where, like, we're going to see something like more fun surprises. Or
His enunciations are... Yeah. There is... He does not leave his box. He's got a very specific... That's why it's weird to watch something like Regarding Henry or... is it Regarding Henry? The one where he gets shot? Where he does dip out of that a little bit. Or, like, even in, like, Last Crusade when he goes, these are not tapestry. We have many tapestry. Whatever he says about... Like, he very rarely goes outside of that. There's a rhythm and a music and,
definitely.
You know... Yeah. It's so weird. But, yeah, I feel the same way.
But then to complete the... To do the acting for this person and to feel that sort of weight for their performance. And it's interesting, like I don't often feel like a professional when I go into a place. You know, whenever I go to the ADR stage at Warner Brothers and you're like, okay, here's the room, go in there and now go be a professional.
Right.
But doing matching is the one place where I do feel like I hear it back, like you guys are saying, and I'll turn to the mixer and be like, I need another one.
Yeah.
Regardless of what the ADR director is saying, like, I can beat that.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely. I'm never afraid to ask for more takes ever.
Oh, yeah.
It's so important.
Especially with what, because it'll drive you crazy. If I hear something with voice matching that isn't right, we talked about it. I mean, I know I've told everyone that worked on the crew so far. So this drives me crazy. I got sick before doing Han. And, like, I wasn't really sick. We turned on the heat in my apartment, and we hadn't turned it on all year. So I woke up with the bloodiest nose I've ever had. And then,
oh, no!
Yeah, and then day, I had to do a session for the show, The Croods, and all I did was scream.
Oh,
and so
man.
The next day, my voice was completely gone, and I went to, like, a singing coach to try to get my voice back, and, like, my voice was just like, I just sounded like this.
He was
and
so
I
nervous
was so
when we were waiting
nervous.
To go, and he was, like, chugging tea.
Oh,
like,
my God. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I was terrified.
Still think, I know you're going to say, like, you hear it back and you stress, but I think your Han is amazing. Both of your Hans are so spot on. It's crazy.
Well, thank you. I mean, to me, though, because
that's
the thing.
Drive
it's
you
the
nuts.
Obsessive thing.
Yes.
It's that 10% where I go, oh, I know that I could put, because I hear there's a thinness to my voice. Like, I'll warm up for like forever to be like, I gotta be. There's like a smooth something that I do to, you know, to warm up. And I couldn't get to the end. I mean, I'm happy with what I did. I feel, and everyone was super nice. And I'm like, sounds awesome. But in my brain, I'm going, oh, damn it. Next time I do it, I gotta not have the bloodiest nose of all time. It was a night. I've never had that happen to me before. I was like, because it was like 30 degrees out in LA, and I was like, turn on the heat, honey. You know, like, this will be fun. I was so upset. But I mean, it was so, that session was so much fun.
It was great.
Yeah, it was crazy.
That was super fun. Man. And I was happy we got to actually work together, which was really nice.
That's so fantastic that you guys got to play it. Had you met before that session?
No. Yeah.
Well, what was that session like? Obviously, the stakes are.
As big as they get.
I think we all, I walked around for 3 months before that first session, just like, even when I'm broke and sad and still going, I'm Han Solo.
Right.
And then, and then I was okay. It was kind of like just getting
It was terrifying in a way. I mean, I was so excited. So first of all, the whole process was nuts because I auditioned from home. I sent in one audition, and then I got the email from my agent saying, hey, they want to offer you the role of Princess Leia. And I was like, but this is what? I didn't have to go in like 10 times? Like, I don't understand what's happening right now.
Right,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I cried a lot, obviously. I was so excited. But then when we actually got there on the day, I had done so much research prior to... I had watched all of the movies.
Yeah.
I didn't even have to watch all of the movies. I even watched the movies that Leia's not in. I just watched all the movies. But I did as much work as I possibly could. I was just reciting the lines over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And then, once I got in there, though, that all flew out the window because now I'm acting with another person. And it's
right.
It becomes like, yes, I'm portraying Leia, but it just becomes much more natural when you have that back and forth with someone. So
yeah.
it was just such a fun session, and the whole creative team, they're so warm and so kind.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Dave Filoni is just like the nicest, nerdiest guy.
Oh,
like,
man.
I love him so much.
It was
much.
So weird to see him through the TV, because I mean, I've watched so many special features and interviews with him and stuff like that, because I think he's a genius. And like seeing him through the TV,
it's
I'm like
the Wizard of Oz talking to you.
Exactly. It's like it's real, but it's not real. He's directing us. I'm not just watching a passive YouTube video.
Yeah, right.
It was really surreal. For years I've been bugging Pat Brady, our mutual agent.
Oh yeah, you two are with the same agent.
Yeah. For years I've been like, I swear to God, I could do a Harrison Ford. Like I kept trying to like sending her clips, and I'm like, I know I can do this, and like there was something for like Phineas and Ferb, and like, you know, that came out years ago, and I was like, ah. Then they actually sent me. They sent me your thing. I got sent the older Han.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I was like, I can't do older, because I sounded like Scooby Doo or something. Like, I mean, they were the compliment that I got from Pat. She was like, honey, you sent me the, what'd she say? She was like, you sent me the clip. You didn't send me the actual. You sent me your voiceover. You sent me the wrong thing. And I was like, there was no clip. That was me. And she was like, what? And I was like, wow, that's the greatest compliment I could get.
That's
wow.
Awesome.
And she thought I sent her the thing. And so I was like, oh my God, that's awesome.
That's awesome.
But then I heard back. They were like, you're too young. But would you audition for Young Solo? And I was like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'd much rather do that, because I can't. What you do is incredible. Like, I can't get. There was like a turn in his voice at some point,
yeah,
where the quality of his voice changes. It's weird, but like
it was all in like in my prep for two, like the clip that they sent associated with it, because it was all code language and all that other stuff.
Oh,
and
yeah,
the clip was him doing the Chewie We're Home bit, but then there's a secondary clip on YouTube where I found where he's walking around talking about it. That's the thing. It's all true,
right?
You know, and that like so this sort gravelly. Of like. But it's where Tom Waits lives in
yeah.
my
head. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like where Dave Walsh had talked about doing promo stuff, and he had to like remind when he's coaching people or remind himself that there's no hole right here. Like I was resonating in the middle of my Adam's apple.
Right.
And that's kind of where Harrison, for me, is buried, you know?
Right,
I love
yeah.
the face you make. Well, I know no one can see it, but it's amazing.
You can feel that to me.
Yeah.
I feel that in the voice. Yeah. Like when I say it, like I'll loosen my lip, and because if you watch his face, one half of it's kind of falling down, and the other, he's got this very specific shape. And I think there's something to, he's got this. There's this lisp.
I love this.
There's this lisp.
So awesome. Right.
But you can hear that in his voice, and it's really subtle, but it's not even a lisp. It's like there's just a softness. I don't know how to describe it.
And that softness that you're doing right now, it's really hard to mimic. It's why Harrison is tough. And like to be able to do it, I can only do him old. Like even if I try to, I can do him when he's angry.
Yeah. Oh, when he's angry, that's the best.
Listen.
Yeah.
You are, you know.
Listen, got, sweetheart. Chewie, he's got that, whatever that is. I love that. That's like my favorite. I use that phrase.
This is amazing. My head is going back to like a ping pong ball.
I did a caveman character called Batesy for the crew. They were like, what do you want to do? And I was like, can I just do like only angry Harrison Ford? And he's like, listen, but it's like a really bad almost Yosemite Sam meets like somewhere in the middle.
Right.
But he's got such a fun, he's a character. I mean, he's such a character. There's such a richness to that character.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But to continue the story, so basically, so when we went in, I was terrified because the voice thing, I was like, they're going to tell me to come back. I'm like, they're going to, I was so worried they were going to recast me. Like I was talking to, my buddy, D. Bradley Baker is a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I like called him. I was like, dude, like, I'm really nervous. Like, I sound like crap. You know, he's like, just let him know and let him know I had to have time. And I mean, he always sounds like Daffy Duck to me. That's my, I hope he doesn't hear this. But like, that's kind of what he sounds like in my head all the time.
You're going to get an angry phone call.
I know, exactly.
I sound like
Daffy Duck. Daffy Duck sounds like this. I don't sound anything like this. Dude, Bradley, what happened?
What happened? But he was like, let him know ahead of time. And so I did. And they were like, no, it's fine. Come in and we'll see what it is. Or see how it works out. But then when I went in, I bought like a liter of tea, and I was so nervous. I couldn't talk above a whisper. And I went in, you know, I kept telling him, I was like, listen, this is, you know, my voice sounds like crap. And they were like, no, it's fine. And then once we actually did it, I mean, I was so comfortable with you, Shelby, and with Dave, and with, you know, the whole crew.
It's such a warm
room. Oh my God. I was immediately like, I went from being terrified for 3 months, you know, that I wasn't gonna be, I couldn't even watch the movies. Like I cut together a bunch of like clips of Harrison talking, but like every time I watched the movies, I got like sick to my stomach. Cause I was like, I need to do that, you know, like, and it blew my mind. And it was this combination of being nervous to being able to step up to bat combined with you know, just like, can I do it? You know, like, I don't know, maybe totally. They'll think I'm a fraud. And
yeah, I understand that. I literally, my phone was full of just me playing clips from A New Hope specifically and then me mimicking it.
Right.
And playing it again and me mimicking it. Now, I just sounded like a crazy person. Every time I was in my car, that's all I was doing.
Oh, absolutely. I have a playlist of just Harrison Ford stuff. Same. I'm driving around. You're like, Chewie. You know, like just in the car screaming at nobody.
Because with Carrie Fisher, too, her voice changes so much between the original trilogy. In A New Hope, she has this British effect that she has on some lines.
Yeah.
Like specifically when she's talking to Tarkin, she, Governor Tarkin, I would have expected to find you holding Vader's leash. Like she goes, she has this like total British thing going on that is completely gone once you get to the next film. So it was finding that balance too of just figuring out where I wanted to hit, what line I wanted to have that affect on, what line I didn't. It was so, it was so interesting.
Isn't it funny how as mannered and studied as you are of what moves you want to make on those moments, that when you're in the moment and you're connected to your scene partner, how that shit just goes away.
Oh, it all goes away.
It's so disconcerting. Yeah. And then on the other side of the glass, they're like, you know, they're like the Fat Albert and the Cosby kids, like, yeah, we win.
Well, I think that's why prepping so much is so important, so that when it does go away, you're still in that sweet spot. Like you don't lose it all completely because you have someone else interacting with you. You have all that prep in the back of your mind, but then you just let that honest acting part of you take over, that it's still there to fall back on, but you're just able to be in the moment.
Yeah. It's like this is a weird analogy, but like it's kind of like wearing a costume. Like you forget you're wearing the costume, but people still see that. You know what I mean? Like if you're wearing a Spider-Man costume, it's like, well, you're still Spider-Man. That's kind of how I feel about, if you have that information in your brain, you're still going to sound like it, even if you get confused, if it's sort of, you just have it all in there. It's a musicality.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I was just go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, there is that.
No, after you.
Well, what do you think, listener? No, there is that strange feeling of like, as a matcher, you're always self-directing when you're listening. It's hard to fully turn. It's like a lot of times, like when you record at home, like there's still this sense of like, I have to listen as I'm self-directing and self-side coaching. And is that the right thing? So like, keeping yourself fully in the moment and surrendering yourself to the moment of the character, but then this weird outside, I don't know, I'm pointing, because this is where I sit. I've just drawn an invisible line from my head about 4 inches back and to the right, where my director sits judging me silently during every performance. But it's like listening to yourself going, I don't know if that's it. Dial a little bit higher.
Yeah.
Do you experience that?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. You're tuning an instrument. I mean,
you are. Because there's such a technicality to it where you want it to be as real as possible. Even with over-the-top crazy cartoons, it still needs to be honest. But then you also need to feel like the thing I try to focus on sometimes is I don't want, especially with auditions, because you get such a little amount of dialogue to send in, is I try to not let any two lines sound the same, even if it's a similar feeling, like, oh, she's nervous and then she's shy. You still want to make sure that your voice might go up or down on a certain thing just so it maybe will catch their eye. Like something, there's something to it, but you still don't want it to only that focus to only be on the levels. Like it has to, it is what you're saying.
You're giving
saying.
Them it's a like, sampler of, it's like, here's where I can go.
Yes, here's my poo-poo plateau.
Yeah, exactly. I did, so for the Phineas and Ferb thing, there was a Luke match that they did where it was like, for some reason they had it twice. I regret this deeply because they had I have to go to the Tashi station to pick up some power converters. Like, they had that line twice in the audition. And so I did the exact same way twice. And I was looking back on it now, I'm like, why did I do that? Why didn't I give them like just a different version of it? Yeah. But I was like, well, clearly they screwed up, so I'm going to give them the same exact read.
Yeah, I want to give them exactly what they're asking for, and this is how it was established in 77.
Right, exactly.
And it wasn't changed in the special editions. Therefore,
yeah.
This is correct.
We actually saw the Tashi station.
Yeah. There's that's right. That's a bit right. Okay, so there's a line. Then I'm going to get real geeky. And Empire Strikes Back.
Okay.
Where he's... where Harrison Ford cuts open the Tauntaun or whatever, and he goes, until we get the shelter up, he yells that, and it's this weird 80-yard line that, for some reason, the special edition, it's, until we get the shelter up, it's screamed, and in the normal, like, theatrical versions, until we get the shelter up. It's just this really straightforward thing, and it drives me crazy. Every time I watch the movies, they change that one line. It's weird. Just go, if you watch the movies, that one part drives me nuts. Because as a kid, you know, that was not a miraculous moment, but I remember when I watched the special edition, I was like, hang on, that doesn't sound right. It just sounds so false and strange.
Who is he talking to at that moment? Is he on the radio?
Like, he's talking to Luke. He's like, it'll keep you warm until I get the shelter up. It's like this bizarre. But
in the
theatrical version, you're just like, it'll keep you warm until I get the shelter up. Like, it's just a whatever line. But I love that Lucas went and was like, no, that's not right. I want more. You know, it's so weird.
I love watching the side-by-side comparisons of once they've like changed certain things. It's interesting because some are such minute changes and some it's like, oh, whoa, okay, that's a whole new alien species that wasn't in it before.
It sounds like we put a rock in front of R2. Like, that's an actual one where it's like, there's a rock in front of him. It's like, what? Why did they do that? I love it.
Man. Crazy genius.
I do too.
That's all that it is.
You know, that's it. And if you had the tools to do these things at that time, and you think of what they were able to accomplish, it's jaw-dropping.
It's like time traveling, basically. Yeah. He gets to fix anything that in his mind he views as either a mistake or something that they just, like you were saying, just didn't have the ability to do at that time. So I don't know. I think it's kind of cool.
Yeah, whatever made him happy. I don't mind. I am a little weirded out by the Anakin thing at the end because I like the Sebastian Shaw, the original, the old Anakin, because that's when he died.
Yeah.
And then seeing Hayden Christensen suddenly show up like smiling real goofy, I'm like, no.
Ah, man.
Otherwise, shouldn't Ewan McGregor be there as the...
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Where's Ewan McGregor? Where's Puppet and CG Yoda?
There you go.
I don't know.
Both of them.
Side by side, holding hands.
I love it. That's hilarious. Well, let me ask this. I'm like, this is a fascinating, to me, it's an incredibly fascinating conversation because I don't get to talk that frequently with other people who do this specific aspect of what we do with
either,
the matching. But like, what are some of the other places that you play in? Like, are you chase commercial copy, video game? Like, how do you approach? How does your commercial approach vary from how you approach this particular skill set?
As far as commercial work, I've done a few like internal, very straightforward commercial copy, but I usually will book animated commercials still or character commercials. Yeah. So I did a whole slew of RIP Toys R Us, but Toys R Us commercials.
Oh.
Yeah. I did like, God, like 12 or 15 Toys R Us commercials over the 2015 and 2016 holiday season, which was amazing.
Those the animated toy ones?
Yeah, it was like they just had the toys come
I've
to life.
Yeah, they're awesome. You do an awesome job of those. Yeah.
Thank you.
I looked them up. I was like,
I got to be like a baby doll. I got to be Barbie. I got to do like all these crazy characters, which was super fun. So in that aspect, it's the exact same as animation. I've done a lot of, not a lot of, but I've done a fair share of video games, and I've been lucky enough to do motion capture twice now.
What?
Which
that's
is
awesome.
So fun.
That is the greatest.
Oh, man. I was the lead of Dead Rising 3 years back. That's
no
actually,
kidding.
Yeah, that's what got me back into voiceover. So I had done, like I was saying, those commercials in New York. And I'd done a couple little, like, radio spots in between, but I didn't really have, like, a voiceover agent. And then through my theatrical reps, I got the audition for Dead Rising 3 because they really wanted theatrical actors who knew how to move and whatnot. And I ended up booking it, and we worked for about a month and a half, 2 months on that. And it was just, like, it was insane. It was a type of acting I've never experienced before because you're in a room with hundreds of tiny cameras around you in a box and you are playing pretend. You're literally in a suit playing pretend with your friends. You don't have any real things. They have like props and whatnot, but I did Wolfenstein also a couple.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. A couple
That's
bit
awesome.
Roles in that, which was awesome. And I just remember with that one, they built out of plywood. It was supposed to be an arcade game that we're playing, which was just so crazy. It's like
so
something
weird.
You would do at home with your friends, like
right.
building cardboard boxes.
Right.
And it's a job and it's great and it's so fun. So with acting for video games, I'm sure you guys know that's a lot more grounded.
Yeah.
That's a lot more. They just want you to be you as realistic as possible. Of course, there's characters that are still different voices and whatnot, but for me, at least, the video games I've done has all just been my regular speaking voice, maybe like a little lower, a little tougher.
Yeah.
But it's just it's a shift. Because you use your body in the booth, of course,
yeah.
but once you actually have the space to play as well, it's so fun and it's so different from on-camera acting in the aspect of you don't have to worry about your angles or your light or your makeup or your hair or anything, which is so nice.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I agree. It feels like in video game, in particular in performance capture, it's sort of the one form, aside from like industrial, where you can have all the time in the world, where you can just take your moments and really connect to your scene partner and live in that moment. And they're going to move you and change you and cut and all kinds of stuff. And it's all good. I did performance capture on Midnight Club 3 Dub Edition. So like ancient history in video games, but went to Rockstar Games in New York and like they wanted, it was cool because they were like, we want someone from the bosses. It's all set in different cities. So they had Atlanta, San Diego, and Detroit. And I was the Detroit guy.
And that's so sick.
The craziest part of it, and like I mentioned my production background, so I knew a little bit of animation and that kind of stuff. So it helped make that transition. And a friend of mine was always editing, designing stuff in Lightwave. So when they animated our performance capture, they put reference points on the handheld camera. So our director would walk around the volume, like doing like this handheld stuff. And you're like, in a volume, you don't need handheld.
Yeah.
But he put the reference there so he could create for the cinematics a handheld feel in the video game environment.
That's so awesome. Cool.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Video games have seriously become movies. They are just playable movies. And it's so crazy because again, like in a booth, you can absolutely get emotional. But I know there have been times where I have to be upset and crying. And I'm not, there aren't actual tears streaming down my face. I just know how to make my voice sound pinched like I'm crying.
Yeah.
But with motion capture, like you are so in it. You are crying. Like I was sobbing doing some scenes. Like it's intense. It's hard work, but it's so fun.
That's awesome. I've yet to do it. No, I mean,
you will one day, I'm sure.
I hope
and
so,
you will love it.
Cause it looks like so much fun. Like it just looks, I mean, aside from the light in the face, I know there's some rigs that have blinding light.
Yep.
I was talking to a dude who was, he was in Shadows of Mordor and he was opposite Troy Baker and hooked mics or hooked cameras with the guy, and so they were like, "Don't move! This is like $100,000 rig."
Oh,
and apparently, they couldn't get him undone.
That happened.
Did that happen to you?
That's a kissing scene
with the face thing.
Well, they were like, "We're gonna try it. Where you're just gonna turn your faces," and it was like two teenagers with headgear getting stuck together.
Oh, that's great!
And they're like, "All right, we're gonna take off the rigs for the next take."
That's really funny.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
Yeah, that sounds like to me. That sounds like the ultimate form of acting because I mean, it's different if you're on a set and stuff. You actually get to see stuff. And there's you're interacting with stuff, but this is like the ultimate. You're using your full body in a space that you're imagining. At least that's how I picture it. Because like I said, I've only seen other people doing it. So
No, it feels legitimately like a combination of theater on camera and voice all meshed into one.
Sounds
and
beautiful.
It's so fun.
Yeah. And improv too. Like
exactly.
You're just manufacturing this world that they might give you some concept art.
Yeah.
And then like. And then you create that reality for yourself and react to it.
And it was so crazy because with Wolfenstein, they actually captured my face. Like, they captured my facial movements for Dead Rising 3, but she didn't look anything like me, the character. Okay. But for Wolfenstein, she looked just like me. And I've seen myself on TV before. I don't know why this freaked me out so much, but it was just this, what is it, the uncanny valley where it was like,
CG version
it's
of you
me,
is
but
be
not
weird.
Me, and it tripped me out. They gave me brown eyes. I was like, what?
That's amazing.
My wife could not handle my character in Midnight Club 3. She was like, it's too strange because it was same kind of thing. Like the model looked nothing like me, but it walked like me.
Yeah.
And that was enough for her to be like, I wish this into the cornfield. This doesn't exist.
That's great. That is terrifying.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. It's so wild.
What were we talking about before that? There was some other question.
You were asking, or he was asking about, like,
well, what's
for you, commercial approach.
Because I was like, in my head, I was starting to come up with an answer, but we went, and then I forgot it. What was the question?
Well, how do you approach, like, you know, the other aspects of your career? I mean, you know, look, voiceover is, it's one of the things I love about voiceover is that if you're just strictly an animation person, it's awesome, but there's a day where animation starts to slow and you want to be able to have multiple options to keep yourself diverse and flexible. And like right now, lately, I've been doing more promo stuff, which is crazy.
Right.
But like right now, I'm doing Funny or Die TV for IFC. So like I got to do a session this morning,
that's
which is
awesome.
Like
that's awesome. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like it's just nice when different things are firing. So I'm just curious about what your process is like with – you know, with auditions for those kind of things, or, you know, how you prep or whatever?
That's weird. I don't know. I mean, I'll often, depending on what it is, if it's a pre-existing show, I'll look up the tone. I mean, because you don't, you know, you picture a tone in your head, and then when you actually look it up, you're like, oh my God, like it could be totally different. Yeah. So that's a big thing. And like, but I know with like Voltron, that I play Prince Lotor in Voltron, and I
do the voice, do the voice.
What is the voice? He just sounds like this. He's just a very sexy British boy, which I love. That, to me, the show wasn't out yet when I auditioned for that.
Yeah.
And there was a character I had done in a Disney movie that was canceled. And so I was doing scratch in this Disney movie, and I loved the character, and it just kind of went away. And he was a lighter version of this character, but I was like, I love doing that voice. It feels good to do physically, and it's just a fun person. And so when I saw this villain, and they had a picture of him, and they described him, I was like, I'm just going to do that voice. I don't know what the tone is of the show. I don't know if it's silly or... you know, whatever. I was like, I'm going to do the voice I want to do. And that's kind of, I guess, lucked out, because that was, they basically embraced. They're like, yeah, now do that as much as you want and as hard as you want. And it's so great. But I mean, with so many other, with Croods, I was voice matching Clark Duke.
Oh, yeah.
So
you just voice matched a lot, basically.
Right. Yeah. And so, for him, like, I did a video game that nobody played. It was like a Mario Party sort of ripoff kind of thing. Sorry if anyone that worked on the game is listening to this. And it was weird. Like, I did that and I didn't hear back. You know, there wasn't anything after that.
Yeah.
And then a year later, my agents were like, hey, they're doing a table read for the show. Would you come in and do it as Clark Duke? And so I didn't even audition for that series, which is insane.
Wow.
They just brought me, I mean, I guess the table read technically was. But once I was really worried about getting the voice down as much as possible. And then for that, the director, Brendan Hay, was just like, dude, just do your own thing. Like, he was just like, you got the sound of it down. Just like, and then that was it kind of expanded from there. And I don't know, like.
Takes the pressure off.
Yeah, exactly. But as far as approaching, like, other auditions and stuff, it depends on the thing. I never book commercial stuff. Like, the only two commercial things I've booked are, like, inner monologue, like, oh, man, that's really cool. Like, some dude that's like, I really love Pepsi. Like, or, like, I did, like an AM-PM commercial where I was, like, a skeleton that's like, well, that's real cool. And, like, that was the only line.
So, like, still the, like, cartoony-esque.
Yeah, exactly. I
shouldn't say I can't, because hopefully one day I will.
Right, sure.
But I just haven't, again, other than, like, these internal listing off words that I don't even know what I'm saying, jobs.
Right. Yeah.
I haven't booked just like a straightforward commercial.
That's so
it's
wild.
Always
yeah, I haven't
a character.
Either. Yeah, it's always some. It's always like a person that's sort of like one of the animation characters I would play, or like a video game character I would do, like something in that realm.
Yeah.
But I've only gotten like three or something like that in the 7 years I've been doing this. Because anytime I get one, I just sort of go through the motions. You know what I mean? I'm like, all right, I'll do this. I've never booked like a McDonald's, like, you know, whatever, where it's like, we just want it to sound like a normal guy talking about the fry sale
maybe it's
that's going
we don't
on.
Sound normal.
Yeah, maybe that's
maybe
what
that's
it is.
It.
Yeah, I'm okay with
know.
That.
Yeah, right?
It's funny because I value programmed in commercial. So like I came up through commercial and primarily in Chicago, like Detroit, Chicago, Cleveland. It was the only work that was there. So like coming out to LA was about getting into animation, video games.
Right,
stuff. I've done a little bit of that, but commercial still a little bit more bread and butter.
That's what I was going to say. I'd love to do more commercials just for.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Bread and butter.
Yeah. Exactly.
Bread and butter. Yeah. It's wild. Like, it's not wild. It's just, it's interesting because it's so. What's become apparent to me is how regionalized the work can be and how it. You know, how you do the work that is where you are. And if you're drawn to this market, the nature of the work is just going to be different.
Definitely.
You know?
Definitely.
And you guys were both drawn here from different places, which is just super cool.
Yeah.
I mean, we all are. Everyone's sort of an orphan. Or, you know, we all kind of come in from other places and sort of adopted by
LA.
It's like this wonderful magnet for like...
Weirdos?
Yeah, for weirdos. For freaks who
there's,
are like...
I forget what movie it is, but the quote is something like, it's LA is like America. Someone picked up America like a rug and shook it, and all the crazies and the weirdos fell to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And it's so true. That's where we
it's
are.
So true.
And I love it. I wouldn't have it any other way.
What's that Ryan Gosling, Emma Stone movie? Is that
La La Land?
La La Land?
It's not that.
Wait, you're in La La Land, weren't you?
Yeah.
You're in La La Land?
Yeah, I'm in La La Land.
Yeah, you're like a barista.
Yeah, I'm the barista right at the end where like Emma comes back into the restaurant that she used to work at, the coffee shop she used to work at. And
oh,
then
man.
She's trying to pay, and I'm like, no, 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 it's on the house. And then she puts money in the tab anyway, and I smile warmly as she turns and walks around. And everyone's like, isn't that Emma? Like, yeah, that's Emma.
That's
right.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I love that movie. I just rewatched that too. That's so funny.
That's so great. Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. It was, you were in Batman versus Superman too. I watched both of those movies like within a week of each other, and I was like, wait a second. Kif is now like you've imprinted in my brain, and you're just showing up in all the movies I watch.
Well, good. I'm glad.
Do you do a lot of on camera as well?
Yeah, quite
that's
a bit.
Awesome.
I mean,
same.
It's do you really?
Yeah,
that's great.
That's mainly what I've done. That's the voiceover thing. Honestly, like even though I've had background doing it, this is such a new chapter in my life. Still, it feels like it's really only been about 3-ish years that I've really focused on it. So it's really it's such a difference though, because I was listening back to old like my first ever voiceover audition I sent once I signed with a strictly voiceover agent, and it's so bad because it's so. Just trying to be a regular on-camera actor, and it's like this is flat because they can't see my face. They don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah,
you can get away with that when you're acting on camera because it's so much about your eyes and your emotion and what your face is conveying. And then with voiceover, I learned, which should have been obvious, they can't see you, Shelby. You need to make your voice.
Yeah, there's like a divine balance between the two.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No. I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you doing to to put your eyes in your voice? It's a weird question.
No, but that makes sense. I get that.
I'm wondering if I can describe it. It's just been, honestly, taking classes for animation has helped so much. I took a class with Charlie Adler that, like, changed my life. I took a class with Donna Grillo as well. And it's sort of that, what I was saying earlier, of making sure to hit certain inflections and just... Really, I don't know how to I really don't know how to describe it. I'm trying to figure it out. Instead of, like, if the copy was like, hey, how are you doing? I feel like if it was just me talking, hey, how are you doing? You would see, like, my eyebrows go up.
Yeah.
But with this, I'd have to be like, hey, how are you doing? Like, it just, there's something that adds so you can picture what your face is doing. I don't know if this makes any
it's
sense
so hard
what
to describe.
I'm talking about
there's
at all.
There's a quality to your voice. You have to add a certain percentage of quality, I think it is, or a certain refinement, even though you can be rough. Like, for on camera, you just do it what you do, basically.
Exactly.
But, like, there's something about voiceover where you have to have, there's a certain refinement or a clarity. There's something else you need.
Because you just need to convey to the audience, this is what my character is feeling. And of course, they're going to animate something around it, but it's just, it needs to make sense.
I almost feel like you're trying to give the animators something to animate.
Definitely.
Like, if that makes any sense.
Definitely.
And I don't know if that's true or not.
Because sometimes it's animated before you even come in. It just depends. But no, totally. And that I think, I don't know. I explained that so bad. I'm so sorry.
No.
I think it made sense.
Appreciate how you explain it, because it's a hard thing to put into words.
Yeah.
Especially processor, especially if you, like, I don't know. Like the studying acting aspect of things, like I'm still like, man, I need to take some classes.
Yeah.
And like, and
you can always learn more. It doesn't matter who you are, what you've done. If you're an Oscar winner, like you're still always studying. And I think that's a really big thing that people need to realize is with acting, it's like you're never just coasting. And if you are, you're not doing that well. Like you need to constantly be working on your craft if you want to continue working.
Yeah.
It's really important.
You are always changing. The market is always changing. The type of projects. Like
cartoons have changed so much since I was a kid. It's crazy.
Even the style of what we've seen from the spots, the Forces of Destiny that dropped today versus what dropped last year.
Right.
And the animation style is different.
Yeah.
It feels even more realistic.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, like there's more drama to it.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating.
It's
you
so
know?
Fun.
Yeah.
Do you do much on camera stuff, AJ? Or you?
No, I mean, I used to do the crappy stuff in college.
I used to do crappy things.
Student films. No, I mean, it's something I've tried to sort of look into. I've talked to Shelby about this before.
Oh,
I have no idea what the path is. You know what I mean? Like, I sort of fell in like Mr. Magoo into voiceover.
Uh-huh.
And so just trying to redo that and fall into on camera stuff is not so easy. I mean, I've done a bunch of stuff with friends and whatnot, but I have no idea how to get into it. Maybe one day I'll look back on this podcast and go, that's funny. I figured it out and now I'm a star.
In your trailer, your Diet Coke.
Exactly, my Diet Coke.
We'll all be, our trailers will be adjacent. I'll be playing your father.
All be playing my father?
We'll all be playing your father.
Your father. Ooh.
We'll all be playing your father. Three-headed father.
Oh, that's terrifying. But it's something I miss it. I miss the fun of it. And like, even just just doing stuff. Like, I filmed some stuff with a friend recently, and I was like, God, I missed the texture of it, the fun, the sort of excitement, and the on-the-fly kind of, like, I don't know, there's something, there's a very different feel to it.
Oh,
it's way more exhausting. It hurts more.
Yeah.
You know, like, on every level, it's more painful. But I feel like ultimately you're just like, wow, look, it's real. It's 3D. It's there's something different about it.
Yeah.
It's all you.
It's
really.
Also, it's so crazy because with your voice, obviously it's a time capsule in itself. But with on camera, it's something that you can look back on. Like, I look at things I did when I was a little kid and I'm like, this is crazy. I get to watch myself as a 7-year-old.
That's
like,
so weird.
What?
Yeah.
It's so strange.
You can't help but think about where you were in your life
exactly.
and what was going on at that time.
Exactly.
And like, you know, these and the day. And the things that you walk away from that experience, like, it's so cool. Like, you just mentioned, and when you said, oh, Batman versus Superman, like,
right, yeah.
it was the sense memory of Zack Snyder standing on the porch with Zack and with Mason and no one else around and him thanking us for doing a nice job and just being great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
You guys really did great work tonight. And, like, no one around, and just that.
Those crazy
moments.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Thanks, Zack Snyder.
Yeah, thank you, Zack Snyder. I love all your movies.
That's amazing.
I was directed by David Fincher, and I died. Awesome. It was, like, besides this, honestly, I think I was just as nervous for Forces of Destiny as I was for Social Network. But it was that same, like, heart-pounding, like, okay, what am I doing wrong? Because we did so many takes, and I had known that David Fincher was known for doing so many takes. But I was still like, oh, my God, I'm messing it up. And then it was actually Armie Hammer, who was on set waiting for his scene, who was like, if you get out under 100 takes, you're doing great. And we did something like 65 takes for this one scene.
Wow.
But it's so crazy because it gets so technical in a way that's similar to voiceover but completely different because this was face, where David Fincher was like, raise your left eyebrow while you're saying this line. Like, hit it really hard like this. Like, it was so
that's awesome.
Specific. Which is something that I do with my voice. With voiceover, I'll be like, I have to pitch my voice up on this line. So it's a parallel in a way, but just the complete opposite.
That's amazing. There's really funny, I love Lord of the Rings. I'm a huge Lord of the Rings.
Same.
And behind the scenes, have you seen this with Christopher Lee? Where he's like, we did something like 40, 50 takes. And I'm like, he's talking about Peter Jackson. He's like, I want this line up and this line down. I can't do a good Christopher Lee, but like.
That's not bad.
Christopher Lee.
But his sort of frustration is so beautiful. Because he's someone that's used to doing, you know, like Hammer horror films, where you probably do like 3 takes and you're done.
Yeah.
And he's like, we're doing something like 30 or 50 takes. And I, you know, and like at some point he loses it because he's like, Peter, I can't get up these goddamn stairs. And like, because he keeps tripping over his robe. He's like, and then someone behind the camera goes, well, you did it this morning. And that put me in my place. And like, I think about that a lot. When I do a lot of takes, I just think about Christopher Lee doing 50 takes for Peter Jackson.
Yeah.
And I did a Disney thing recently where it was all scratch. And the director seriously had me do, it was like 30 or 40 takes for like one line. And it was like, she was up here and down here and around. And I was like, I felt like I was losing my mind.
Yeah.
And eventually I talked to her afterwards and I was like, what is going on? And she was like, oh, you know, I want every syllable. I want everything covered because we don't really know where this is going.
Oh,
and so I'd made it okay, but it was excruciating. It was honestly the most excruciating voice thing I've ever done because it was just every single line was like, twist this word, do this word, and it was insane. I've never done anything to
like
that
boot
degree.
Camp almost.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it was brutal.
Yeah.
It was brutal, but like, you know, ultimately when I saw the finished product, you know, we got to have a screening of it. It was awesome. I was like, wow, that you were right.
Yeah.
You know, like it came out incredible, but like in the moment I was like, this person's insane. I was so angry because I'd never been, you know, just pushed to that degree.
Yeah.
Totally.
And it wasn't an emotional thing. It was a very technical, mechanical. It was like you were saying with the eyebrow up.
Yeah.
Except it was like, I want to hear this twang on this one letter, you know, and I was like, this is nuts. Yeah. So,
and you start to question
yourself.
How am I failing these people who I, for my entire life, would give everything for? Because, like you mentioning that fear of being replaced, you're in the booth.
Oh, yeah.
And it's such an illogical fear.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a real fear to have because it happens. It does happen, and it's terrifying. Even with on camera, I did an episode of Freddie Prinze Jr. had a sitcom called Freddie when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And the episode was Freddie and the Hot Mom. And I
love everything about this story.
Right?
This is so funny. Are you making
daughter,
this up? This is like a Mad Lib.
No, I swear.
Freddie
and the Hot Mom.
Okay, please go on.
I was the daughter of the Hot Mom. And they had cast a beautiful woman who just looked too young to be my mom, but they could have decided that I looked too old to be her daughter. But we did the table read. We went to lunch. And then we came back from lunch and I had a new mom.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it's just crazy how that happens. And it's, a lot of the times, like with that, that's nothing personal. That's nothing against her acting or abilities. And same with voiceover. Sometimes it's not that you're doing a bad job. It's just that your voice isn't matching what they want. Yeah. Yeah. So it is a real fear, but it is so illogical once you have that job and you know, like you can see they're happy, but you're still in your head like, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God.
I'm crap. That was the Harrison Ford. I mean, you know, the pressure to do so. Everybody has a Harrison Ford impression. Or not everybody. It's not like Al Pacino, but like to me, I was like, there are people screaming.
there's like tiers of impressions. There's like the Sean Connery, Jack Nicholson, everyone does Christopher Walken, and then there's the guy. Then there's another tier down of the guys who have. Oh, I can also do Liam Neeson and Sean Connery, and Harrison Ford, and like, and a Gilbert Gottfried creeps in, but a really good Gilbert Gottfried. But then the guys who go down another level, who can do Johnny Depp, like Tom Cruise, which I've never been able to successfully match.
I'm not even,
I have a friend who can do a spot on Tom Cruise, and it's the craziest because it's the same. I've never heard anybody do it. I'm
Robert Downey. I'm going to throw that out. You're Robert Downey. So the first thing we ever worked on together is something we can't actually still talk about ever because I don't think it exists.
I don't know if it exists. I think it might have made it, but I don't know if it exists.
Yeah, exactly. So you did Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
It was awesome. I was so blown away. I was like, I don't know this guy, but I was just like, hey, you're the guy who did Robert Downey Jr. That was incredible. That was incredible.
How his voice would
sound.
So first of all you got to do really is just sort of, I don't know, be flippant and really heavy California accent.
That's
and
then, perfect.
When I was doing it, I remember like because I was
oh, you had your hands down.
It was so much fun.
I remember making fun of you for that.
That's
that was amazing.
Were like, aha, look at him over there. And I was like,
your hands
I didn't come to the room to get judged, y'all. I'm just trying to work.
I was 20 minutes late to that session.
I got a call from Pat going, where's AJ?
Oh,
like he was in the car with me. I was like, I don't even know who you're talking about.
That was mortifying. I was in Culver and I don't know what happened, but like I had more than enough time to get to Burbank. It was totally fine. And as I'm going, like, all of a sudden, traffic just starts piling up, and I'm like,
this is the nightmare.
Oh, my God. I was, like, cold sweats. I was like, I'm going to be late. And this was, like, the first really big thing I had done since, like, Back to the Future. And I was like, oh, my God, and this was a dream gig for me.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Mortified. I was mortified. And then I came in, and Pat was not very happy with me. You know,
We were with funny people, and everything worked out.
Yeah,
that's the worst feeling.
That's the truth.
The world.
There's a lot of things to be afraid of in California.
Traffic.
But one of the worst things is having like a 10:30 session in Burbank and being on the west side and traffic just piling up on the 101.
Oh my God, yep.
And no options.
Yeah.
And
when I was doing the Dead Rising game, I was living in Glendale at the time, and we were working in Marina. So I either had the option, which I took option A, of getting there an hour and a half early and just going to like a Denny's around the corner and hanging out every morning, or being late. I tried the first one the first day, and I was also 20 minutes late. And I was like, well, guess I'm leaving at 5 a.m.
That was same thing for me. I was like, I'm going to leave like 2 hours. Like I left obscenely early for that specific gig. Nothing
just
I could
against
do.
Nothing
it was
you
just
do.
Yeah. Whatever powers may be.
Yeah.
I was just like, you're not getting there. And I was like, ugh.
My first session for BioShock Infinite, that was exactly what happened. I had a 10 o'clock session at Technicolor, and I left Santa Monica at 8:30, and I was an hour late.
Oh my God.
And it was a Skype session, and I'm the head villain, and like all the things conspiring against you, and to make it even more fun is I don't feel like we got what we needed to get. Like I got in the room and I got wired, and they put like I was wearing a baseball cap with two lobs pinned on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, so they had animated the scene, and it's where my character gets killed, and it had already been rendered. And I was literally doing ADR to an animated piece.
Wow.
And I carried in the guilt of being late
it's
into
horrible.
The booth.
You
it's hard to let that go.
Yeah.
And for me, when I'm really nervous, my stomach starts to hurt too. So then I'm like stressed out because I'm like, okay, I'm in pain, but I have to do this. And I was late and I'm sweating and it's just like, it's a mess.
Yeah. I get to an apology. Like, so this game.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. So this game Evolve that I did, I played this character that was very similar to me. And, the first day I was pitching a show at Nickelodeon. Like I had a show that I had written and I was pitching and I told my agents, I do a lot of weird stuff. But I told my agents like, hey, I don't know if I can make this session. I'm doing this thing. I've been trying to do this for years. I finally got into a pitch, and the pitch went long. And I, so, of course, I was late. And the first time, I was like, okay, I'm sorry. Like, it's okay. You were pitching a thing. The next 2 days, I was just as late. And I kept trying. I was like, I swear to God, like, I left so early. I felt, by the third day, I just felt this crushing pain. I was like, I'm trying so hard to get here on time. And it was just like, everything was working against me. And like, of course, it like rained on like the third day, and then traffic stopped. And I was just like, because the first day, it's like, all right, man, I get it. And then the second and third, I've never felt more guilty. Yeah, it was. I was like texting one of my friends who was friend with the director, and I was just like, "Dude, tell him I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm never like this." And Pat even got mad at me. She was like, "You can't do this." And I was like, "I know. I'm sorry, Pat. I love you. I'm sorry."
Oh man.
Yeah. So I want to tell this story about our session.
Oh.
You know what the story is?
Yeah.
Okay. So because I love it, I think it's so well. Because it's also a compliment. It's
no,
brilliant.
It's true. It's
okay.
True.
So you might have to fix the details, because I always get the details of the story wrong. So. We went into our Forces of Destiny session, and I wasn't feeling totally great because I didn't have a voice. And you had mentioned maybe sort of you weren't feeling great.
Yes, I had said I had a slight stuffy nose, and I was mainly saying this to make you feel better.
Well, I used it as
fuel.
I was like,
oh, yeah, you know, I was nervous too because I woke up and I'm just a little stuffy. I feel like I'm a little like
stuffy there. That is so sweet
of
you.
There.
You were trying to take a bullet. Yeah. Oh, my God.
No,
he throws me under the bus.
We go into the session, and I said something about, like, I don't remember the exact words, but it was something along the lines of like, oh, I'm sorry, like my voice isn't like I was feeling sick or whatever.
And
but Shelby's sick too.
And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I basically said like, way to throw me under the bus, dude.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell?
And we immediately started arguing.
Bickering, and it was like, it's like Han and Leia.
Yeah,
Dave,
yeah,
totally.
Dave Filoni was like, oh, this is he was like,
yeah,
he lit up. Yeah.
So
and he was like, oh my God, this is so Han and Leia. And then afterwards I was like, I'm so glad I threw Shelby under the bus for this. Because
yeah,
it worked
so
out so
glad.
Once we did that though, I felt like it changed the whole thing.
True.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm so sorry. I wasn't trying to throw you under the bus. I don't know what. I guess I
panicked. It's been my mortal
enemy
ever since.
But it was beautiful.
No, it was actually great. It worked out.
It was so funny. But you were so mad at me. I just saw the anger pass over your face.
Because I try to be overly professional when I work. Like, I am so, like, I'm learning. You know what's so funny? I'm learning now I don't have to be. Like, I'm learning, like, of course you need to be professional and get your work done, but it's okay to shoot the shit and talk and hang out and have fun. And I just had this mindset of like, all right, I need to show up. This is late. I need to be there. I need to be in the moment. Nothing's going to distract me. And then he's like, yo, Shelby's sick. I was like, eye twitching.
I'm sorry.
But actually, no, it helped me angrily break out of my shell.
Oh, it was great.
Awesome.
I think that worked out so well because it was,
did.
Yeah, if Dave hadn't said, oh my God, there's Han and Leia or whatever he said,
yeah.
I was like, wow, we did it accidentally.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad I was a total jerk to Shelby to make that work.
And it worked because in that short, we're bickering.
No, we're bickering the whole time.
And it captures the truth of the relationship.
Yeah,
it captures
exactly.
The truth of the storytelling. And it captures the truth of that moment that turned out to be a spectacular piece of animation and a worthy part of the canon.
That's so crazy. People are like, is this canon?
Oh,
I'm like,
God.
It is canon. We're all
it's
in canon.
So crazy. I know.
High five. Come on.
I can't reach you both.
That was terrible.
Well, unfortunately, our time is rapidly running out. So I can't think of a better way to wrap things up, though. What a spectacular, like, so
this
cool.
Is so fun.
I'm so happy
this
that
so
you guys got to do
it. Yeah.
And we got to do this.
Yeah. Oh, God,
and to be able to just kind of nerd out about it, but also share process and all that stuff, and I learned a ton too, which was also awesome. How can people find you on social media? I mean, both of you guys are really engaged. Like, I pitched this show to you on our regular Twitter feed, which I was nervous about doing, but I was like, I don't know how to contact them directly, so here.
I'm on the internet way too often.
Me too.
My Twitter handle is Shelby_Young, and then my Instagram is Shelby H. Young, and then my website is Shelby-Young.com.
Awesome.
Mine's just, it's at AJ Locascio. I think it's on Instagram and Twitter. You don't need to follow me. I have too many. My Twitter and Instagram have gotten weird now.
They have.
They've gotten real
it's
weird.
It's real fun. It's the Voltron fans with their
God.
Fan art. I mean,
that's
they're
right.
Crazy
oh,
talented.
So talented.
But I also love
man,
how
what?
Much you retweet and
oh,
interact.
It's I
the
try.
Best to watch.
I try.
I
it's
so,
well,
so cool.
What was that?
I mean, I know for me as a fan of things as a kid, like, if Harrison Ford, like, retweeted a picture that I drew of Harrison Ford, like, hey, look at
freak
this
out,
kid.
Right?
Yeah.
Chrissy Teigen followed me the other day and I died.
What?
I know.
Well, that's the addiction. I mean, that's what's so tough is I think some kid spent, because a lot of the people are, you know, they're 16 or younger, like down to like, you know, 7 or 8 years old. They drew this picture. I'm like, AJ, I drew this for you. And it breaks my heart to miss something.
Yeah.
So it's like, I know I look insane to like my fellow castmates and stuff.
Awesome.
And like people are like, AJ's just constantly tweeting this purple guy, you know, like. But it kills me to think I missed something.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, now it's gotten a little weird. Someone started like an AJ Locascio pun account on Instagram where it's just puns of my name, like AJ Locascio, AJ Mo the Gracio, like all kinds of whatever. So it's gotten really bizarre. Someone started an account just for my like left eye. That's just pictures of my left eye that I saw this morning. Like,
the internet.
It's gotten a little too weird, but all the fan art and stuff, all that stuff means so much. Because, you know, I was a kid. I wish I could have gotten like a picture that I drew to Mark Hamill or something. You know, like. So it's tough to not want to do it, but I do feel insane. It's very easy to fall down a rabbit hole and become immediately depressed and overwhelmed.
No,
but,
I love watching it happen. I love watching your descent into madness.
It is.
And let me just give a shout out to Vero, by the way. I don't know if you guys are on the Vero social media
I signed
platform.
Up and then didn't understand it.
Yeah, same. I downloaded it and then deleted
it. It's super simple. All it is like, hey, I listened to this David Bowie song. It's awesome. Check it out. Hey, I just watched Poltergeist. Poltergeist is a great movie. It's kind of like
you're describing Twitter.
Yeah, it's like what Twitter was.
Yeah.
People put up pictures, people put up books they've read, or like movies, clips, but then if you put up a song, a link to a song, it'll stream from Apple Music.
Oh, that's cool.
Like and play 30 seconds of it. And you can put up your own pictures, but I usually claim, you know, it's all kind of circled around Zach initially. Zach was one of the, was releasing pictures from Batman vs. Superman behind the scenes stuff. On there, and then people started jumping on board with like, ooh, Zack Snyder. And then, but some of his production team have been on there and photographers and stuff.
Yeah.
And Clay Enos, who's one of the photographers, just said, you know, this isn't about followers. This is about inspiration. This is about following people whose feed is of interest and exciting to you. And that's kind of the idea. It's kind of like how Pinterest is
that's
too,
like Tumblr, I was going to say. Yeah. I have a secret. Well, it's not really a secret because I reblog Forces of Destiny stuff. But I have a semi-secret Tumblr. And that's like kind of what that is, which I love.
Yeah, it's kind of a fun
Tumblr.
Place to put
Ooh,
your stuff.
I have to
super
find you.
Super secret Tumblr. You'll never find me.
I'll find
You'll
you.
Never find
it's
me.
It's under AJ Locascio's right eye.
Yeah, exactly. I own the rights.
Turns out it's all AJ doing all of those fan accounts.
Yeah, That's what I'm afraid of. Like, I made a suggestion. I was like, oh, why don't you try AJ? When I said something stupid, like, gave him a suggestion. I was like, oh, AJ Locaptio or something like Captain EO.
Captain EO.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was like, people are going to think I'm running this account if I, so
that's hilarious.
After that, I'm out of here.
Yeah, exactly. Goodbye.
All right. I think we all are out of here after that one. AJ, Shelby, thank you so much for coming in.
This is
freaking
so much
delightful.
Fun.
So much fun.
This is awesome.
And check out our work on Forces of Destiny.
Yes.
Streaming on YouTube right now and showing up occasionally on Disney Channel.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, you guys.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. We'll be back with more soon. Peace. This has been All Over VoiceOver with Kiff VH. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please go to iTunes and give us a positive rating. It truly helps. Follow me on Twitter at Kiff VH or on Instagram at Kiff VH or on Vero at Kiff VH. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you soon. Claim victory and depart the field.